This is episode 1 Foxtrot of the Software Freedom Law Show for January 19th, 2010. Hi, this is the Software Freedom Law Show. I'm Karen Sandler.
I'm Bradley Kuhn.
And I'm Aaron Williamson.
We have a third host today.
That's right. I didn't even have to be specially introduced until after I said my name.
Well, you're not. You're a sometimes host.
That doesn't make you any less special.
Can I be a correspondent? Like they have on the news shows?
Well, I think you can, provided that you're a mobile correspondent.
Today's show is about mobile phones and free software.
Yeah, this is a little bit different than what we usually cover because we're not really directly covering a legal issue related to free software. This is more related to the fact that we had a desire in our offices to be using phones that were based on free software. And Aaron really spearheaded the idea and got us moving in that direction. So we've invited him to join us as a host today so we can talk more about that.
I think we will talk a little bit about some of the legal issues because I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the licensing of the different mobile platforms. And since, just to remind everyone that Aaron is also a lawyer, that's another conversation we can have.
So should we go back in time to when we first, well, I can go back way in time when SFLC started because I actually had to buy the first mobile phones we ever bought.
I really want to make Wayne's World sounds.
Okay,
thank you.
So when SFLC started in 2005, we signed up for a regular T-Mobile account and they got a bunch of zero cost phones that come with signing up for a new account for a business. And they were all some Motorola phone. As it turns out, they probably ran a proprietary version of Symbian, which we're going to talk about more later. And they were, of course, your typical proprietary software telephones. This is 2005 when this happened, so it wasn't common that you could find any free software running on mobile platforms in those days. So I was always bothered by the fact of using a mobile phone that ran proprietary software or any device that runs proprietary software, but there didn't really, the choice was basically between using a mobile phone at all or using one with proprietary software because they were all proprietary. And they were just beginning to cross the line where you could actually put applications on them and became more like general purpose computers. And once they're a lot like general purpose computers, that's when I think the issues of free software really come up. Not that they weren't general purpose chipsets, but they really were relatively targeted devices that couldn't do much more than just make and receive calls and make and receive SMS.
But you didn't get a new phone, I don't think, at that point, right?
I did because my previous phone was owned by my previous employer, the Free Software Foundation, so I think that phone was for a while used by Peter Brown, actually, because that was given back to FSF, and I think Peter used it. It came with the position, apparently. Executive director phone got given to the new executive director at that time, so I didn't have a phone at that point, so I ended up using one of the phones that we got as part of the sign-up plan, which I used for a really long time.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Does that make me sound evil?
No.
And I accepted a new phone running proprietary software?
No, well, if you had no phone, you know, at that point, you needed a phone and there wasn't a...
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't just
steal FSF's phone. There wasn't a viable alternative anyway.
Yeah, I'm keeping this. Amazingly, this chair I'm sitting in was given to me by FSF as my parting gift. Because it's actually FSF owned this chair. This was my goodbye gift.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I just remembered that. I'd forgotten it myself.
That's funny.
Yeah, but the phone wasn't included. Nor were batteries.
I just use my own phone.
Aaron's making faces. This is what we normally do. this is, our listeners like this stuff, apparently.
No, that's good.
Some of our listeners do, and some of our listeners do not.
That's certainly true.
But I actually kept my phone. From
You should use your personal phone.
Yes, I didn't get any.
You own a personal phone.
Exactly.
And you came to SFLC.
Exactly. So you had no personal.
I've never owned a mobile phone.
Oh, actually, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Oh no, wait. In the early 1990s, I did. But since like 93, I've never 94 something like that. I've never owned a mobile phone. My employers have always owned them.
Boy, I didn't have a mobile phone till 2000 when my employer gave me one.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I was a sysadmin in those days, and they wanted to call me all times, day and night, to tell me to bitch at me that the servers were down.
I've owned lots of mobile phones because I lose them frequently.
I see.
Backseats of cabs.
Oh, I lost so many of my old workplaces in the backs of cabs in London.
But losing mobile phones doesn't have anything to do with the software on mobile phones.
No. Although those phones were free for whoever, you know, got into the cab after me.
Free as in price.
Free as in price.
Not necessarily free as in freedom.
But
so
my first phone that was owned by SFLC, actually. Wait, or did I buy that myself?
No.
I can't remember which. I tried.
SFLC paid for it.
Oh, okay. So I did own an OpenMoCo phone was my
but
next
we,
phone
SFLC
after.
But OpenMoCo phone, which you
and
used
SFLC, oh, I see. I tried to buy it personally, and I think...
they rejected it. Well, they weren't... Well, I mean, this was the whole problem with the OpenMoCo process, was I think that Sean, who led the team at FIC that did the OpenMoCo, was very serious about making it happen. The problem was it was too small of a run, and it was too difficult to do free hardware and free software up and down, top to bottom, in the year he was trying it. Maybe if we're starting again from scratch today, it might be possible. But there were a number of problems, both with the software stack and with the hardware stack with the OpenMoCo, which was really unfortunate, but a reality.
Yeah, well, we made it. I mean, I used it for a long time.
Well, you had that audio problem, right? With the, there was the...
There's
the,
a, an actual... I never got around to making
the soldering fix.
But every weekend I thought, this is the weekend I'm going to do it, and I just never got around to it. But there was a buzzing connected to some faulty connection in the phone.
But the idea that the only way to get your phone working correctly is to have to solder something, I mean, we can't actually get widespread adoption of a free software phone that has these kinds of bugs.
Right.
I mean,
you won't even get widespread adoption within the free software community of application developers for a phone that doesn't have a basic stack that allows you to use the phone as a phone. You know, I think what they were trying to do is get the phone into people's hands so that people could hack on it and whatever, but very few people can afford to own two mobile phones, one for development and one for general use. And I think that was a big problem with adoption of the OpenMoCo.
Yeah, there were so many problems with it. And they rewrote the software stack a number of times, actually, through the course. So they never really settled on a software stack and so forth. So, in the meantime, there's Google off doing this Android thing, which is actually what we've settled on.
I believe it's the Open Handset Alliance that developed Android, which was Google.
Yeah. So that's a thinly veiled Google, I suppose. But
who else is in the Open Handset Alliance?
I'm not actually sure. I'm sure there are other logos on their corporate webpage.
So the upside to Android was that it was, first of all, it uses Linux as its kernel, which is helpful, and that's sort of equivalent to what OpenMoCo was doing, because it too was using Linux as its kernel. But they rewrote more or less the entire software stack from kernel up.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm going to link to Harold Velta's blog post in the show notes, because he talked and linked to yet another talk that he had heard about this issue, and there is sort of a lot of dislike of that stack by the traditional free software community.
Well, certainly by kernel developers, because they basically twisted it to become something that was not intended by, I think, the developers who actually wrote the kernel to begin with.
Well, I actually think it was more than that. I think when you look at any, I think Harold's objections primarily come from the fact that he worked really hard. He actually worked on OpenMoCo for a while and tried to get it to be a viable platform. So of course he has that. I think it's actually less about the kernel. There is the issue of the kernel. You're right about that. Greg KH has talked about the issues of trying to bring the Android changes out of staging into the mainline kernel, and that's just probably not going to happen for various reasons, etc. But even when you go past the kernel to the C library status, instead of picking either the two standard options for C libraries, even embedded systems, which would be the GNU C library or UC libc, they pick this weirdly ported FreeBSD one called Bionic, which is much, as I understand it from the developers who tried to port code to it, port standard Unix-like software to it, it's not as functional a C library as even UC libc, let alone to glibc. I mean, glibc might be too much bloat to put into a phone anyway, but UC libc is actually designed for these sorts of environments.
Yeah, and presumably the rationale behind that choice was licensing, because they were trying to keep as much of the stack permissively licensed as possible.
Do you think that was the driving factor, or was there a technological reason? I don't actually know.
I don't know.
Everything I read seemed to indicate that it was more of a licensing drive, but...
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I mean, and also, you know, the whole application space was intended to be, you know, Java, and Java. And so I don't think that they were targeting C application development. And so they might not have considered much how generally useful their C library was outside of their own.
Right. They wanted enough C library to make the JVM that they wrote Run, which was also permissibly licensed. Right. And then once they got there, they were done. On the other hand, I'm not particularly bothered by the fact that it's a pure Java environment. Not that I'm a fan of Java necessarily. In fact, I don't like it very much. But Java is the most widely language taught in undergraduate education in computer science. It makes sense to have a very specific and targeted platform on a phone that's not necessarily GNU/Linux. A lot of developers, even developers we've worked with in this replicant thing that we sort of got started, you and I, Aaron, those developers really lean towards making it a GNU Linux stack that they can use. I tend to feel that we don't necessarily need that for a phone. I don't actually think we need every last GNU Linux application running on a phone, because a phone is a very different type of environment, and if there's a different way you have to write applications for it, it doesn't really bother me that much. Karen, do you disagree? Or
no, I'm still thinking about whether...
Are you surprised that I believe that?
I'm not surprised because I've heard you say that before, but I actually was just wondering, is it really true that Java is still the most widely taught language?
Oh, absolutely.
Really,
I'm sure of that. I'm almost sure.
It was at the end of my college days for sure, but
well, not the end of mine,
university days.
Right, but I mean,
1 or 2 years was pretty critical then.
Yeah,
there are so many. I mean, there are new systems being developed in Java, obviously, all the time, but there are also so many legacy systems now that Java's sort of established. That I mean, I think that it makes sense for Java to be so widely taught.
The most widely taught? I really think it probably is.
Okay. I mean, it until the AP course changes. I mean, it's the most widely language taught in high school. When I taught AP computer science, it was C++, which was a mistake, frankly. I think 2 years after I taught it, it switched to Java, and it stayed Java. Now, there's this new announcement about AP computer science in high schools. Claire, U.S. listeners will know this, but our national listeners won't. There's a system called the Advanced Placement System in United States high schools, where students can take effectively college-level material while still in secondary education level. And I'm talking about the Advanced Placement Computer Science course, which is basically the equivalent of your first programming course in college, and it's taught in high schools. And they switched from C++ to Java in the late
90s. Right, I think when we were in high school, Java. It was Pascal.
Correct. I took the AP exam in Pascal.
Yeah.
But they switched to C++.
I thought about taking AP exam.
They switched to C++ in the mid to late 90s, and then
right.
in the very very late 90s, they like 99, I think it was. They switched to Java.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think because of that, it's not so bad. The licensing structure is complicated, and the reason it's complicated is not because I'm against permissive licenses, but because when you get an Android phone, you have no idea if the stack is really free software or not.
Right. I mean, there is the thing called the Android Open Source Project, and that is all free software. You know, there's a little bit of GPLv2 stuff, including the kernel.
It's exclusively the kernel.
Exclusively the kernel. Right. That's probably true. Most of the rest of it is licensed Apache 2.0, and all of that is free software, and you can take the entire thing off of their site and try and make it run on whatever you've got. The issue is that you cannot get a mobile phone that you can put Android on and use it as a phone without using some proprietary software. And often that's down to the firmware. Sometimes it's some drivers.
Right. Well, there's actually two orthogonal issues that cause trouble. So the one you're talking about is even on the phones we have, which we bought developer phones that you can fully upgrade and have access to, we run into this problem where the Bluetooth, I think, is proprietary. The camera driver and library is proprietary. The wireless.
But not the radio anymore, right? Or is that?
Well, I mean.
I'm sorry.
The radio is in a complicated state. Let's just talk about this issue specifically. So, mm-hmm. So the kernel is obviously the thing that's talking to the hardware. Then there's also a set of libraries that we actually, in our analysis, aren't really sure what stage and what parts they talk to. It seems like the Java code seems to talk to them extra the kernel, as far as we can tell, right? On some of these libraries.
I'm not even going to opine.
Yeah, I'm going to opine because it's a technical thing, and if people say I'm wrong, people say I'm wrong with technical things all the time. But that seems to be the case, that there's both some proprietary drivers and some proprietary libraries. Now, what Karen's referencing is that Aaron and I started this project called Replicant, which a couple of Italian developers are working on, which is kind of neat. And they've actually gotten, at least for the European space, they've gotten the RIL library, which is the GSM interface library from OpenMoco, ported over and working on their Android phones. We haven't been able to use it in the US for reasons we're not really sure of yet. But that's actually a really easy library to write because all it does is send AT commands. Most people don't know this, but a GSM modem, which is really actually is a modem, takes standard Hayes AT commands, or extended Hayes AT commands to do phone calls. Like you say AT, DT, and make a call, just like the old days with a modem. So that library, that's all it does, is send these AT commands to the GSM radio. Now, the GSM radio is actually its own processor. So it has a firmware that is software running on the processor that's the GSM stack, and that's fully proprietary, although it's a totally different processor and totally separate from the main Android system. The main Android system's just sending AT commands, and the GSM chipset's operating on its own. Now, there's also work being done. Harold's contributing now, that we haven't mentioned Harold before, and lots of other people have been trying to build a free GSM stack, which could theoretically someday replace those firmwares. And there's been some news articles about that recently. But that's a totally separate issue. I would be happy if we just had all the libraries and kernel drivers free software and we're still living with that one level of firmware, which is sort of equivalent to the wireless firmwares on laptops. Mm-hmm.
There are a few, for example, on the HTC Dream, which is the phone that we're using around here, there are a few pieces that are firmware that are proprietary. So you've got the radio firmware, you have the Bluetooth firmware, and you have the Wi-Fi firmware, I believe.
The camera too, no?
I think it's just a driver for the camera. Okay. But so these are pieces that are actually, you know, that have to be copied over into the
right. So the strange thing we do when we build is you take, and this actually was why there was some hubbubaloo about people redistributing firmwares from Google, because there's various proprietary components in the firmware you get by default on the phone. There's first of all these proprietary drivers firmware and some proprietary applications. And people were remixing those and putting them up on the internet, which of course some of it's free software, some of it's not, so you can't just redistribute all of it.
Well, I'm gonna correct you a little bit here. Okay. Most of the hullabaloo was about the Google applications.
True enough.
The Google Experience applications. And Google, I mean, quite correctly said that, you know, the applications that they've, you know, maintained as proprietary cannot be redistributed freely. So you can't just package together your own firmware to give out to your friends that has their applications in it. Now, of course, we think they should have licensed those freely to begin with, but that's a separate issue. What I think most people didn't focus on was that even if you left those Google Experience applications out, you still would not be able to package a working firmware to distribute publicly, that you actually had the right to do that with because of all of these libraries and firmware that are still proprietary software.
Right, and there's a couple of different... You're completely correct on that. I wasn't speaking exactly right. But there are these many little instruction sets. We have one on the Replicant site, and there can be found on other sites that tell you how to pull off the couple of proprietary things you need to make the phone work. I actually have the camera and the Bluetooth disabled on mine. I have the Wi-Fi on, even though it's proprietary, because I'm using it for Wi-Fi, and I have the GSM on, obviously, because you can't make calls or SMS without it. So those are the only two components I'm using. They're proprietary. I just turned all the other hardware off, which I think most everybody here has that on their phones.
Right. Well, we left the libraries out entirely of our build.
Yeah. So we did this very basic build of just the free software applications that Google released, plus the free software kernel, plus these few little proprietary libraries and drivers. So we've got an almost fully free software system working on Android phones. But to get to the other point, we had to buy the developer phones to do that.
Right. I mean, or rather, in order to do that without voiding our agreement with whatever carrier, we had to buy a developer phone.
Oh, so you think you could actually do it? You have to do jailbreak.
Yeah, you have to jailbreak. But I mean, most of the people out there using CyanogenMod's mod,
right? Which is one of the, but for the listeners, that's one of those firmwares we're talking about where people have repackaged with lots of proprietary stuff.
Yeah, and that's most of the people who are using that are using it on a Dream that they bought from
T-Mobile.
From T-Mobile, and then jailbroke.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of our goals, obviously, being who we are, is we didn't want to violate any terms of service or agreements. So by buying the developer phones, we paid a premium to get the developer phones. But on the developer phones, you're allowed to install new versions of firmware, and you don't agree to anything that says you won't. So that's a help. But of course, any phone can be jailbroken, including the most proprietary phone on the market, being the iPhone. Although they send out little things to destroy jailbroken phones and stuff over the network. So I don't think any of the Android carriers are doing that yet.
Probably.
We hope not.
I don't know if their customers would be as willing to buy another one after their old one had been bricked.
Yeah.
Here's a great example, and this was talked about publicly on Floss Weekly, so I don't have a problem saying it. Randall, and actually Linux Outlaws talked to this as well, Randall Schwartz bought an iPhone, had it bricked because he jailbroke it, and then went and bought another one.
That's what I'm referring to. It's actually pretty common. I mean, I know of other people who have done that as well.
Once somebody bricked my hardware simply because I tried to install my own software, and I would never go to that company again.
Yeah.
But I guess people don't mind. Randall doesn't seem to mind. It surprised me because Randall's like a hardcore hacker guy who loves to make software do cool things, and he's really good at it. So I'm surprised that he would be like, what? You're not going to let me do this? But anyway, so that hasn't happened on the Android side yet, which is good. But we still have this issue, and we haven't even examined the Nexus One yet to see how much proprietary stuff's on there, if you can install. We're thinking about getting one just to try. We haven't decided yet. The Dream has been the platform we've focused on simply because most everybody here likes keyboards as opposed to not having a keyboard, which the Nexus One doesn't, and because it was out earlier. So if any listeners have gotten the Nexus One and done the kind of analysis, if you look on the Replicant website, what we did, we'd love to hear from you if you've looked and seen how much proprietary software's on there and so forth.
I think now that we also have a working solution, we have phones for everyone. Everyone who wanted one will probably stick with them for a while.
Yeah, I mean, and I haven't had as much time as I wanted to dedicate to trying to do this, and I'm also not very good at the work that needs to be done. The work that needs to be done is really low level rewriting of some libraries, hardware interface libraries, and it's not the kind of programming I'm particularly good at. So,
and I'm even worse at it.
I think we're probably equal on that. Trust me, I'm not. It's pretty hard to be worse than me at that because it's not something I do very well. So we've hoped that somebody would do that, and the problem is it's sort of the same problem we find in the wireless space on laptops, because there's basically only one chipset out there that has a fully free firmware or fully free driver top and down, top to bottom, where you can put all free software and run the wireless card.
And you should plug them. Yeah.
The F5K and the F9K have that. Although McGraw keeps correcting me about what I say about because apparently the F9K doesn't have a firmware. It works differently.
Oh, is that true?
The word firmware is not right in that context, McGraw's been telling me. So McGraw is Luis Rodriguez, who works for Atheros as their main kernel guy, Linux guy. So it's sort of a misnomer to say F9K has a firmware. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all free software. Mm-hmm. No matter what you need, any software you need to run the F9K or F5K is all free software. But that's the only wireless chipset. So a lot of people still use the proprietary chipsets, in part because their operating system doesn't inform them they're installing proprietary software if they run, for example, Ubuntu. And also because it works, so people aren't incentivized to write free software for it.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at this a little bit yesterday. I was actually looking at the MAMO stuff for in preparation for this call, just to see, to get a better understanding.
I don't think this is a call.
I guess I didn't call.
Just sitting in front of a microphone we were going to do here.
Right. So in preparation for this podcast, I wanted to see just how much of the software needed to run a MAMO device, I guess specifically the N900, which is the only MAMO device out there right now, was free software, and how much of it was proprietary. And there's actually a far more active community of people working to replace proprietary bits on the MAMO platform than there is on the Android platform, or at least that's the feeling that I get.
Well, I think, I don't know. I think that's true in the application space on MAMO.
Right, and that's sort of the point I was going to get to, is that there's a lot more work to be done there that more developers can do.
Correct.
And so the low level stuff, nobody has to, you know, look too closely at until they've got the applications that they need.
Right. I mean, and this is sort of the complexity of the situation. MAMO is a more traditional GNU/Linux type platform because it basically has various different libraries from standard desktop systems that you would find. So you can write applications in a much more traditional way. And there are a whole list of proprietary applications. And actually, Quim Gill, who's sort of the community communications person for that product, has done a really good job on their wiki building a list of all the proprietary components. And that's probably the list you were looking at as well. But my concern is, again, the lower level stuff, because I think applications are going to get written that are free software. It's actually pretty easy to get people to write applications because it serves a direct need that they have at that moment.
Plus, apps are cool now.
Yeah. But the low level stuff, much harder to get people to work on. And it seems to me that the Nokia devices have more proprietary software by default and are less useful without that proprietary software installed.
Right, that's true. But there's also, I guess, it's the N, you know, 8XX and 9XX platforms have been around, have been adopted, or have, I guess, seen more adoption historically by free software developers just because they've been around and they were little Linux devices that you could play around with and put software on. So I think that there are people who are familiar with the platform, and there are just more developers who have been working on it for a longer period of time.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily opposed to going to another platform because of this, but they were generally hackerish devices, and they were marketed as tablet computers, and that's really what they were, because only this most recent version has a phone in it in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know if that's actually going to be the long-term platform that people gather around. It seems like Android will be because Google puts effort behind it. So my feeling has been that because of the level to which Google will be able to market the thing, if we can get that to be a fully free software platform and get builds that will run on all the devices, that's probably a more likely longer-term solution for free software on those platforms. And with just one line of phones from Nokia, with Nokia doing most of the software, it's not clear that that's going to be the future of free software telephones. I'm always happy to see two things happening at once because that increases the likelihood of success. But in both cases, as we point out, nobody's paying attention to the low-level stuff, except for us who aren't even skilled enough to do it.
Right.
So, do you actually want to talk about what the Replicant project is that you're
starting? So we started a project that doesn't have a lot of effort behind it yet. We have basically one developer whose username is GNU2, and you can find him on IRC on Freenode, /Replicant, who's put a lot of work in, but he's got a limited amount of time that he can put in, trying to replace some of these low-level libraries. Yeah. And he's been coordinating with the HTC Linux project, he's interested in getting a GNU/Linux system running on the HTC Dream as well. So he's focused lately in that direction.
Yeah.
But we put up a little wiki and a mailing list. Mailing list actually hasn't been used at all yet, but it's there, and I want it, and I'm the moderator, so if you want to subscribe, go ahead. So I'll put the link in the show notes. If people have an interest in some of this low-level stuff, we're happy to help as much as we can. At least OSUSL happily put us up a wiki and so forth in the mailing list, so we have basic developer resources. There's a clone of the Git repositories from the Android, I think the previous version of Android, Gitorious, that GNU2's been committing to the changes he's made to make RIL work and other such things.
Yeah. So to give a little bit of an overview of what's actually there, the way we started was just to put up basic build instructions for how you can put together a working phone or a working build for the HTC Dream that left out as many of the proprietary firmwares and libraries as possible. From there, as you mentioned, this developer, GNU2, started working on the audio library because that was the sort of one proprietary library that you couldn't really live without, because you need to be able to hear your phone ring and you need to be able to hear people talking to you. So he actually successfully wrote an audio library that will replace the one that ships with the phone. And then he moved on to the RIL implementation, which is still buggy. Mm-hmm. And he's been spending a lot of time trying to get GNU Linux running on the Dream.
Yeah, and a lot of developers, and this is why the Nokia device is popular, because it's a traditional system. And this was Harold's point when he flamed the Android stack. I don't know. I guess I've been worn down about this issue because I would prefer to have a full operating system that I can SSH into and all that sort of thing that works the way I want it to. But other than the cool thing I've SSH'd into my phone, after that's over, it's not that important.
Yeah, I think that Google made some technical decisions here that were directed toward having a unified platform. That was specifically targeted for use on a phone, and it's not going to be familiar to people who, you know, are familiar with the Linux kernel as it exists on your desktop. But it does the phone stuff well, and it provides a sort of standardized API for writing applications and communicating between applications that, you know, is targeted for phones. And it's not necessarily a traditional development model, and some people have criticized it even as a mobile development model. But you can see the reasons behind, you know, making the kernel work the way that they did.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I wish it were all GPL'd or something, or LGPL'd, but it is what it is. They pick their own license, they release the software. Okay. I think it'd be great for people to start writing GPL v3'd and AGPL v3'd applications for the phone, because there's no reason they can't. And they should, mm-hmm. And I hope people will. The other thing to think about with regard to why they picked Java and why they did this is to think about Symbian, which is a somewhat Java environment and was a traditional mobile phone platform. It really was the first application possible phone platform, and was fully proprietary for many years in the late 1990s and early 2000s. There's this effort now, and Nokia is trying to make it free software. As far as I know, it can't even be built yet. It's under the Eclipse public license, which is not necessarily a bad license, but of course it's GPL incompatible, which means you can't write GPL'd applications that link against the stuff. If you could write an application at all, which you can't, because you can't build the damn thing. So I'm not that hopeful of the future of Symbian in a lot of ways. I think it's more of a legacy release of interest to historians more than it will be to developers.
I don't know. I mean, I think we'll see. I mean, they've made a bunch of announcements recently, like last 6 months, about their commitment to freeing the code, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but even if they succeed and get all the code out there you need under EPL and you can actually build it, and even if they do it in, say, a six-month time frame, which is probably pretty optimistic, they're taking an old code base that probably fewer and fewer developers are interested in writing for and trying to get it out there on phones. I don't think it's going to be of anything but historical interest, ultimately. And not only that, it's completely controlled by corporate entities, and therefore it's not the Android is not from the Google sense, but there actually is a vibrant community of non-Google people who want to write applications for Android. That's not there for Symbian because nobody can yet anyway.
Yeah. Right, but what I'm saying is that we'll see if it develops. I mean, well, I get what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that we don't know yet because, unlike Android, it hasn't been fully released yet.
Yeah, I think any new mobile platform is going to run into the same problems that Google is still struggling with right now, which is winning developer buy-in, because, you know, the iPhone came first and people, you know, sort of flocked to it and have been writing applications for it, and you can target more users that way. And, you know, by getting more phones through more carriers into more people's hands, I think that Android is slowly starting to overcome that burden. But then when you have the choice between developing for the iPhone, developing for Android, and then developing for Symbian, which, you know, right now no one is using, and eventually there will be, you know, many fewer people using than either Android or the iPhone, I think you'll find developers, you know, choosing the more popular platforms.
Yeah, I agree with you about that. I think this is where the free software community has to start paying attention, because I know all of you out there, I run into you guys on IRC all the time, you want something that looks like the thing you know, you want a GNU Linux system, you're dying to work on the Nokia. I know a number of developers who, as a friend of mine is saying about them, I'm not going to say who these people are because I don't want to call them out, but he's saying, oh, he's happy with his new toy. I mean, that's what the E900, is that what it's called?
N900,
yeah. That's what the N900 is. It's the shiny new thing, the shiny new object that they're all excited about. And, oh, wait, but it's GNU Linux, and it's got GTK, and it's got Qt, and I can write applications the way I'm used to. I think long-term, this is actually something we can learn from Apple. Not that I like Apple, I hate Apple, and everybody knows that. But they do create a standard application base that's really targeted for their devices, and people have to conform to it to write good applications. And the applications that come out, people find, users find very seamless. Yeah. And there's no reason we can't imitate that in the free software space. I mean, you have freedom of the code, you can fork it and make it different and so forth, but adhering to the APIs that are set there for Android and making the applications very integrated, I actually think can compete with the iPhone, which is the most popular smartphone. I hate that term, but whatever you want to call it, the application-based computer-like phone out there. And there's no reason people can't start writing GPL applications for Android. I would love to see people launching GPL projects to write applications, and it's an exciting space. It will get you hired, right? Google is seriously putting their effort behind Android. So Android's not going to go away in the next 5 years, no matter what. So if you're looking for a free software space to make your mark and get yourself known as a talented developer, writing GPL v3 applications for Android is a really good way. Honestly, when you compare that up against Nokia, there's only one company that's going to be pushing Nokia devices, and that's Nokia. Everybody else has, you got Motorola doing Android devices, you've got Google doing their own, and so forth. If your application runs on Android, you actually can get wide adoption and maybe get hired.
There's also a culture of paying for apps now, a small amount. So I actually was talking to somebody the other day who made their GPL app available on the Google Marketplace, and he basically made it available twice, once for no charge, and once for charge, saying, you know, this is whatever the fee was, $1 or $2 for the app, but it's released under the GPL, and you can, you know, you can download it for free, or you can get it on the marketplace without paying. But it's, you know, it's licensed under the GPL regardless. And he's found that about half of the people who download it are paying for it, choosing to pay for it. And I think that's another unique sort of opportunity.
So this has been a problem with the iPhone application store, which is it's basically impossible to put free software applications on the iPhone application store, because the agreement you have to agree to put it up there basically says it can't be free software. Now, in the case of the, in the case of the Android application market from Google, do you have to have all the copyright, so you're actually offering under a different license when you put it up? Or can you offer it under GPL with, say, an offer for source up on the Android marketplace?
You know, I haven't looked terribly closely at that agreement. My general impression is that you can put free software, copyleft software, up in the Android store. The problem that I see actually with the Android market is that for people like us who have built their own Android build and have chosen not to put in the proprietary Google applications on our phone, well, the market application is a proprietary application. So you and I can't actually buy applications through the Android market.
So and people have talked in our communities, the IRC channels we hang out on, that people have talked about a free market, which is a pretty funny way to talk about it. So they want a free market for Google applications and so forth, or for Google phone applications, for Android applications. But in the medium term, before we have that, it seems to me, so that those of us who are installing our own builds, I don't know, because I refuse to learn because I'm stupid, but I can ask you and you'll tell me how to install an APK onto my phone.
Right.
And so those of us running our own builds, we don't even need the market, because we can go, but my point is, I don't want to run any proprietary applications anyway. So, and most people who would use a build like the one we're trying to do with Replicant are not going to want to install proprietary software. So they're going to know how to get an APK file from the developer's website and install it themselves, generally speaking, because you just use ADB to do it, right? It's pretty straightforward.
That's sort of true. But yeah, it's also a little bit like using Debian without apt-get. It's really hard to find applications for what you're looking for. It's, you know, when you want it, you can't just go and get it. You know, you have to use a second computer to install software on, you know, the computer that you're most interested in, your phone. And so it's way suboptimal. And it's also, you know, not everybody is, it's hard to find applications. It's hard to know where to look for applications. Nobody is listing and reviewing applications anywhere else, because everybody uses the market.
So what's the best way to solve that in the medium term? Do we just use my solution, knowing that's a problem, and try to work on it as best we can? I mean, it seems like that's the only way to go. It's just encourage people to install their own applications. So should we have a directory of applications that's not a market?
I mean, maybe it would be great if somebody compiled, yeah. you know.
Because I know that Graziano, who's another guy who's been volunteering at Replicant. I'm doing this all by IRC usernames because I know him primarily by IRC. He's put up a little short list on his. He does Libre Planet Italia, and he's put a little short list up on that website of applications. What I looked at recently, there's like 10 GPL'd applications he found. But see. I'm not as worried about that as I am about getting, to quote Steve Ballmer, developers, right?
Yeah.
So the more people writing applications for Android that are GPL'd, even if they're putting them up on the market and, oh, okay, so the majority of their user base is installing them with proprietary software, that's much better than having people write proprietary applications or having people not write applications at all for a free platform. Or people writing iPhone applications, right? I mean, there's so many other things that people want to write phone applications they could be doing that would hurt the advancement of free software. Whereas if we could just get people writing GPL'd applications for Android or for Nokia's N900, if that's really what you're into, and putting them up in whatever way makes sense, over time, they can maybe fund themselves through the store, realizing that that's a proprietary route, but then also have a free software. And not only that, if people are installing through the store, they probably don't know all these things we're talking about, nor have they been exposed really to issues of software freedom. We've got lots of Android users who are being exposed to software freedom for the first time because of that phone, and they're getting a skewed view of it because of all the things we've been talking about. Now imagine what happens when they see their first offer for Source in an Android app they install from the marketplace. They're going to see that there is this thing called GPL. They're going to learn about free software and hopefully learn that what they're using is based on free software and that's why it's good.
I mean, I have friends that use the market and you know, and have the sort of a proprietary Android build, but they prefer to use GPL or other free software apps, and they at least can search for their apps based on license if they want to. So that already is a component of the way the market works. But I agree with you that I think a lot of people don't know about it, and it's a good way to get that information out there.
So, developers.
Yeah. I guess.
So the question is, Do we have specific advice for what people should do?
I was actually saying, I think we sort of paused there because I think we kind of came to a natural end of our discussion, which is that, you know, we don't necessarily have the answers. You know, we're just here to discuss the problems and to sort of hope that by talking about them, there are other ideas that come out and people come up with ways to solve these problems.
And the thing I would add is, trust me, Aaron and I both know that there's a certain level of pain to try and run the free software build on your device. But if people don't do that, we're never going to find out where the problems are. Yeah, it's like running Ubuntu, for example. When you install Ubuntu, you don't get told what proprietary software is being installed. So lots of Ubuntu users don't realize how much proprietary junk they have. So I think with Android, it's the same thing. If you take the default Android build, you don't learn what's proprietary and what's not, because for free software and proprietary software are all presented to you in roughly the same way. So in trying to build a free software build for your phone, you can actually start to see where the gaps are, that it's not a fully free software device, and that the development community needs help to get more free software applications and to get more free software low-level stuff that replaces some of these proprietary libraries. So I hope people will do that. I know it's painful. I understand that you don't want to do it because you have other things to do, but just by doing it, you're helping, but because you're drawing attention to the fact that, wow, we're missing all this stuff. We don't have these features and so forth.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, I don't know how we're going to solve the proprietary firmware and proprietary hardware library problems, because even if we have people working pretty hard to replace those portions, phones are, you know, they come out one season and they're gone the next, and it would be a huge effort for the community to try and maintain libraries and firmwares for these things. And so hopefully we'll be able to push handset manufacturers to actually release free libraries for these things.
Yeah, that's a really challenging long-term thing. I at this point, we need people just to catalog. So as I was saying, the other thing I would ask the community to do is, if you have a phone that's running Android, at least try to figure out what's proprietary on there, what's needed. Because we only have a good catalog for the HTC Dream. We haven't even done the Nexus One yet. And, mm-hmm. and for us to try and chase it, we just don't have the resources to chase every one of these handsets that's come out and figure out what's free and what's non-free on them. So feel free to, if you sign up, you can get an account, do an account on the Replicant Wiki. That's a perfect use for that. If the Replicant Wiki just became a cataloging of what's proprietary and what's not on all Android devices, that would be a success for the project, I think, alone. So if you feel like doing that, that's not that hard to do. Just look at your phone and see what's in the build, and that's basically their .ko files and .so files that don't have any source. So if you find those, just document it on the wiki for whichever Android handset you have.
And I bet this will be an ongoing discussion. So Aaron will be our mobile correspondent going forward, because I think that there's going to be a lot of change in short periods of time I hope that we can talk about.
And I can only hope that I'll never become your immobile correspondent.
So you can reach us. You can't reach Aaron this way, but if you send anything, we'll forward it to him at podcast@softwarefreedom.org. And you can find me and sometimes Aaron and almost never Karen on the IRC channel, /SFLC on irc.freenode.net, at least when it's not being DDoS'd, which hasn't happened in a week or two, so that's good.
We take donations on our website, softwarefreedom.org, and we also, I guess, would accept equipment donations as well, if you want to give us a phone, I suppose.
And I have I have one piece of viewer mail I want to cover. I already wrote back privately to the person. Somebody was complaining that we have MP3 up. I want to be clear, MP3 right. is a patent-encumbered format, which means in some countries there are patents that cover the MP3, but there is plenty of free software that can read and write MP3s. Now, there may be patent issues related to that free software, but those patent issues don't come up in every country because the patents aren't active in every country. So we draw a distinction between stuff that has no free software to use, like Skype, for example, which we don't use because there's no free software implementation, and MP3, which has free software read and write implementations, but happens to have a patent encumbering it. They're different issues, and I think there's other shows where we've talked about the distinction between that, mm-hmm. but I wanted to bring it up again because somebody emailed and asked about it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we prefer Aug, but because of the practicalities of distributing audio, we also distribute it.
And download-wise, we're like 4-1 on Aug. We put it up there because there's a lot of people who do use MP3, and there's free software to read MP3, so mm-hmm. so it doesn't really bother us. If you want to infringe a patent, that's up to you. You should know the risk, but you might be listening to us in a country that doesn't have a patent on MP3, and then you don't have to worry at all.
Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
The Software Freedom Law Show is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This show is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license.
So I've only done this a couple of times. Isn't this the part of the show where you do a joke?
Well, it's not always a joke.
Well, it's always a joke. It's just not always funny.